Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to call this meeting to order, meeting of the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. I just want to welcome everybody, and I'm really excited to get some good work done in the next few weeks with us. And it's on, right? Oh, okay. But yeah, just really excited to get some good work done here in the next few weeks, and I'm hoping that it goes pretty smoothly and that we can all work together. And so with that, I am going to go up to the rostrum and hand. Oh, yeah, minutes. I'm sorry. Representative Kosnick, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I'm looking at it right now, but I do move the minutes of March
17th, 2025. Any discussion to the motion? All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails. All right. I will switch. And Chair Cagle, would you like to move House File 1360?
I would like to move House File 3160 to be laid over for possible inclusion. I'm really excited to be presenting this bill. Before we take up amendments, I'd actually just like to move to testifiers first. And with that, I'll bring, this is the Empowering Small Communities program that we funded in 2023. It's a small appropriation to the Center for Transportation Studies to build capacity in cities under 15,000 across the state of Minnesota. And with that, I will bring up Kyle Shelton from the university to speak to the program.
Thank you, Representative and Chair and members. It's great to be here with you all today. I am Kyle Shelton. I'm the director of the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota. My center is one of the partners on this program, the Empowering Small Minnesota Communities Program, along with the Minnesota Design Center, represented by Mary Vogel here today, the Humphrey School of Public Affairs Extension's Regional Sustainable Development Partnership, and CURA, the Center for Urban and Regional Affairs, and their Resilient Communities Project. This program really began in 2023 from recognition from you all in the legislature, from small greater Minnesota communities, and from the University of Minnesota around a clear need for additional capacity around infrastructure projects, around thinking about what the challenges are and addressing those in smaller communities that, as you all well know, have small staffs and are often spread pretty thin on projects. And so we saw a great opportunity to identify ways using university resources to pull community centered ideas and community-oriented ideas forward and support them in getting them to project ideas that could be funded by you all in bonding or by federal sources in particular, where the projects could be far more competitive and we could get a good return on investment through coordinating with partners across those communities, with the university, and with partners like you all in the legislature. We've been doing that for now a year and a half with projects in about 45 places in round one. If you see the map in your packet, you can see the round one sites, and another 12 or so
that are progress.
Pending in round two, and they are only pending because we're working on putting a final scope and team together for those. So you can get a sense for where we're serving the state across the state in all regions of the state, and we're really working with those communities. As I said, on community-identified solutions, using the university teams to kind of support those up and help address those challenges, engaging with local residents and agencies and other partners in each of those communities. And our goal is really to improve the coordination and communication across those stakeholders to really allow those projects to develop to a full fruition and be prepared to be funded again, whether that be through bonding, other state funds, or federal pieces. And in those projects, we've supported everything about thinking about highway infrastructure and local streets, downtown building, economic development, water systems, energy efficiencies, landfills, parks and trails. So a wide range of things that we've been working on and are excited to share more. And we have a few folks who can testify to that. And I just would end by saying we're asking for continued funding with this bill to just continue to support additional communities, bring in new projects, and enable to address the wide array of needs that I'm sure you all hear from your constituents each day. And we really want to be able to, as we work with communities and see and identify projects that are high priorities for them, we want to be able to continue that work and have funds to say, okay, we identified a great project. There's a little bit more to do there. What if we tackle that with additional funding? So thank you. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you for your testimony. And the next person, if you could please introduce yourself to the committee.
Carrie Kirschbaum. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Crookston, Minnesota, located about an hour south of Canada up there. I want to just kind of give a brief thing. I was the mayor of a little town called Gary of 200 people for about 8 years, then also worked with economic development for Norman County. And through that time, I became familiar with all the resources at the university, which I was not familiar with. So they really helped me to turn that little town around. And then I recently took a job 2.5 years ago in Crookston, and I had begun to work with a lot of the people from the university. And so when we found out about the Empowering Small Minnesota Communities, I knew the resources available at the university could help small communities because they had already helped me in a little town. We don't have the money to do it. Our general budget for most people is $100,000 to $200,000 a year up in these small communities. So the resources that Empowering Small Minnesota Communities gave us. Just briefly, I'm going to tell you all the people that have come together. We've got trails going. We have community meetings now. Every week we meet with communities because of our resources. We kicked off with like 100 people at the library. Then we've continued these meetings. We had another meeting to say what kind of trails do we need. 100 more people showed up, which is a lot in a small community. So we were able to really gather what they wanted and what they thought. And through that time, we have brought back together. We meet weekly, like I said, but we have the West Polk Soil and County Conservation. We have Otter Tail Power, Polk County Public Health, Northwest Regional Development Commission, Fresh Energy. We have Parks and Rec, Minnesota Design Center, Northwest Regional Development Commission. And these people have all these resources because of bringing empowering small Minnesota communities. All these resources are becoming tangible. Our city council is starting to understand the resources. The communities understand the resources. We've been able to identify funding, so some of the grants that we've been able to bring in have come because of knowing these folks. And so we're very grateful for that, and I would really ask you to continue to move forward. We were the pioneer. We were the original, the first city to start with it. So it was a lot of fun, and we've been able to reach out to other communities as they have questions, and we are continuing to partner in our region with other people. Questions?
We'll go through testimony first. Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next on my list is Dan Udum, City Administrator for City of Lindstrom.
Chair members, my name is Daniel Udum, and I'm the City Administrator for the City of Lindstrom, which is a small city located in East Central Minnesota. The City of Lindstrom was a recipient of an Empowering Small Minnesota Communities grant to assist us in the planning of the redevelopment of one of the city's premier parks, which is Beach Park. I do want to stress that without this grant, we have not been able to undertake this planning efforts as we don't have the financial resources nor the expertise available to allow for this type of planning activity. This planning effort has been incredibly impactful to the future of the City of Lindstrom as we are now able to gain a better understanding of how we can connect Beach Park to not only the city's downtown business district, but also make a better connection to the lake that surrounds it. These connections will make us a more attractive tourism destination, which will help facilitate economic development and growth within the community. In addition to improving connections, the grant has also explored ways for us to improve stormwater treatment within the park, helping the city protect vital natural resources within the city. In closing, this impactful work would not have been possible without the legislature's support of the Empowering Small Minnesota Community Program. This program provides opportunities for communities such as the City of Lindstrom to complete planning projects that otherwise would not be possible. I want to thank you all for your work on behalf of the citizens of the state of Minnesota, and thank you for considering my request for your support of the Empowering Small Minnesota Communities program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And next up we have Dave Dillon, Mayor of the City of Malacca.
Hello, thank you for the opportunity today to express my support for the Empowering Small Minnesota Cities or Communities program. As Mayor of Malacca and a part of the team that is receiving support from ESMC, I can tell you firsthand what a positive impact the program is having on our community. Through our involvement with ESMC, our community has come together to work on the development of the Malacca Junction project. This area is critical to our city, as it is the gateway to Malacca, and it's the first thing you see when you come into our town. The result of this project will be the addition of much needed jobs to our area, a boost to our tax base, and more reasons for visitors to pull off to our who are off the highway and spend time in our community. We have had tremendous support from Molly Zins and Tom Fisher at the University of Minnesota. They have not only been a great resource to help us find all the possible funding solutions to address critical infrastructure challenges, but they also bring fresh and creative ideas to the table. Tom Fisher's vast experience and knowledge has been extremely valuable for our committee. The work on this project has helped strengthen relationships in our Mille Lacs community, and we are building on those assets to make this project happen. This collaboration has not only made this project happen, but it has also led to additional projects that have developed because of these collaborations. We are now looking at addressing some needs in our downtown area, and also as we look at the major construction of Highway 23 through Mille Lacs in 2027, we will be able to use the resources and skills developed during our ESMC project to help us navigate all the challenges that that will present. Again, I ask you to support the ESMC program so that my community and others in Minnesota can gain access to these extremely valuable resources that help them and us thrive. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Glenn Kestor.
This is Glenn Kestor. I'm a supervisor for Bridgewater Township. The township is in Rice County between Northfield and Faribault, about 50 miles south of St. Paul. In 2024, we were awarded a $50,000 grant from the Enabling Small Minnesota Communities Program to address some issues with the Rice County landfill, which sits in our township. I'll give you some background to explain why a township is dealing with landfill issues. The landfill is actually managed by the county. The township collects a host fee of about $160,000 a year, of which 25% goes into a fund dedicated to landfill remediation. That fund currently contains about $700,000. It's been estimated that the landfill will close in 2040 to 2045. We no longer collect the host fee, so we have an incentive to find ways to extend the life of the landfill. In 2022, we had a modest fire, and in 2023, a more significant fire at the landfill. 3 days of black smoke pouring over about 150 residents. Bridgewater residents urged the board, which is putting it mildly, to become more active to addressing landfill pollution. So in 2024, I became aware of the ESMC program through a conversation with one of the board members who lives in Northfield. We applied for a grant to address some of the issues with the landfill and received it in the summer of 2024. $50,000 with the township contributing $10,000. The ESMC connected us with the group at the University of Minnesota. In September of 2024, the ESMC administrator, the university team, two township supervisors, and the Rice County manager of the landfill all met and decided on the focus of our work, which was to remove the PFAS chemicals from the leachate and destroy the chemicals. The University of Minnesota Research Group had developed some novel approaches, which could be very cost effective. The project is coming to an end this month. This is the sort of thing that there's just no way a township with our limited resources could even come across this type of project. We have applied for follow-on funding from other sources to develop a pilot plant. That's about $200,000. And the township would match that from the funds we've been collecting through the host fee. The ESMC program has played an essential role in enabling the township to leverage its financial resources for the benefit of all the residents of Rice County. And I really encourage you to continue this relatively small but extremely effective program to the benefit of all the small communities in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Glenn Kester. Next up, we have Julie Brune, the former mayor of the city of Burgas. If you could introduce yourself to the committee.
Good afternoon. I'm Julie Brune, former mayor of Burgas. I had learned about the Empowering Small Minnesota Communities and initiated the grant and the subsequent partnership. Burgas has a population of 355, and as noted, as a small community, fiscal constraints as well as a lack of capacity and expertise, you really can't engage in meaningful initiatives. So this really was an exciting opportunity for our community. Our project was directed toward energy efficiency to support economic and environmental sustainability. The Burgas municipal infrastructure is old. We have four municipal buildings dating from 1915 to 1972. So the project presented a real opportunity for energy cost savings for the city and its residents. Burgas also sits in a region with several lakes, parks, and trails. So the project has future implications for the environment. The project entailed trending building energy use, conducting energy building audits, and evaluating building integrity, which included thermal imaging. There were a number of improvements identified to optimize energy use and save money. A consolidated report is being compiled that shares our story, the findings, and action plan, and this will be used to guide our community and will be available for use by other small communities. We are addressing the costs and the funding plans to make these improvements. This includes an application for to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, applying for their grant, and working with West Central Initiative on the installation of solar to one of our municipal buildings. I would conclude what has been accomplished would not have been possible without the support that Burgas received. It's been a very positive experience working with the Empowering Small Minnesota Communities and the other partnerships that we have formed with the University of Minnesota Extension and the Center for Sustainable Building Research, the Clean Energy Research Team, and West Central Initiative. And we appreciate the past support and really strongly support future support for small communities.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Brune. Are there any other people wishing to testify? Any members of the public who would wish to testify now?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Chair Cagle.
Thank you. And just to follow up on some of the testimony here, you know, you might wonder why me? Why am I doing this bill? You know, I grew up in the city. I was born in the big city of Duluth and then, you know, moved down to the metro area. But I spend probably more time, you know, in greater Minnesota than a lot of people would think. And I also grew up in small towns. My grandma was from Silver Bay. My other grandparents lived in Two Harbors. My summers were spent running around the North Shore. And now, you know, my husband and I have a place in Longville, which is another small city. And so we spend a lot of time in greater Minnesota. And my heart's there, you know. You know, we all have places that our heart belong. And so that's kind of just one of the reasons why I thought this was a really important program to help some of these small communities build their capacity. And the communities that are getting these grants are not getting any money. What they're getting is services. So they're getting services from the University of Minnesota to help build the capacity of their local governments. And not all of these are transportation related projects, but a lot of them, you know, have stemmed from some of that, have also developed into transportation issues. One of the ones I was door knocking in Knife River, actually in Representative Scraba's district, and a woman pulled me into her a woman pulled me into her foyer and started telling me about this small little program at the U called Empowering Small Minnesota Communities, and I literally almost started crying in her foyer because I was like, you have no idea what that means to me. So it's just for me, it's a really amazing program that's really building the capacity of our small communities just by simply offering the knowledge and services that we already have here at the University of Minnesota. And so if you think of all the different $1 million planning and evaluation grants we see through this committee, you know, there's five of those that fund this program. And so, you know, I think this is a far better use of our money than getting all of those $1 million planning and developing grants. Because what we're doing here is we're helping these communities develop the programs. We're helping them find sources of funding. And then when they come to us, these projects are fully baked, you know, and there is funding already committed from other resources to help get these projects across the finish line. And so it's just been a really cool process. You know, there's a map in there, and I happen to write everybody's names down on it. And so I know that Scraba actually got three. You know, Representative Murphy, you got two of them. And so there's from all over the state, pretty much, you know, a lot of our lawmakers have seen these projects in their districts. And so with that, I would actually move to amendments, if that's all right, or unless questions.
Thank you, Chair Kegel. Are there any other questions from members? Okay, let's move to amendments then.
So I would move the A1 amendment to House File 1360. What this does is it takes the portion of the TAA, and for the first 2 years, it would take the $5 million from the entire TAA, and then after the account, the small cities account hits a $20 million threshold, then this would become out of the small cities portion of the transportation advancement account. And so this is what that amendment does. And I know there was an amendment to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Kegel. Is, first of all, maybe any discussion on the A1 amendment?
Well, we need to do the amendment to the amendment first.
Okay, let's work on the amendment to the amendment. And I think that is Chair Kosmic.
First, we're going to move the author's amendment.
Okay, yep, I moved it.
Correct. Okay, then we'll have comment and then vote on it.
Thank you, Chair Gosnick. Go ahead and discuss your amendment, please.
I believe Representative Olson has some comments.
Okay, now I'm confused.
Yeah, me too.
Are we talking about the author's amendment? Or are we talking about the amendments to the author's amendment? What are we talking about?
Author's first amendment.
You're talking about the author's first amendment.
Sure.
Point of order, Madam Chair.
A1.
We're talking about the A1?
Let's talk about the A1.
We'll talk about
go
the
ahead.
A1. Perfect.
Also.
That's exactly what I wanted to talk about, Madam Chair. Okay, so as the number two on this original House file, the author's amendment is one that is very discouraging to someone like me. We're taking money away from the small cities, and we're telling them what to do with it, but then we're also opening it up to populations that are not actually small cities. A small city is defined as 5,000 people or less. This bill will take designated small city funds away from small cities and authorize them to go to large cities. And I think that's a very inappropriate thing to do. When the money's coming from the general fund, I'm like, sure, if we've got the money, let's do it. But when we're taking it away from what is designated to go to small cities and saying, hey, small cities, you're going to get a bum deal on this one because a larger city now is authorized to take money away from you, that's a significant problem of mine. And an amendment like this is something I could never support with a bill like this. So at the end of the day, if this is actually for small cities, we shouldn't be robbing small cities and allowing larger cities to get it. I'm also not a fan of the idea that we take small city money away from them and say, here's a new way we've decided that you're going to use this same money. It's basically taking the same dollar and saying, instead of being able to use it for this, we think you should use it for this. And that's an inappropriate thing as well. If it's coming straight from the general fund, which is not tied to anything, then I have no problem designating those funds to say small cities, actually not even small cities and cities up to 15,000 use this money for this purpose. I don't have a problem with that. I'm actually in favor of that. I think it'd be a great thing, but I think that the A1 author's amendment falls far short of the mark that we need, and I couldn't support something like this.
Chair Kegel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this bill is being laid over. It's going to be continued to be worked on. When we had originally drafted this bill, we wanted it to come from somewhere in transportation funding because we know of the budget, you know, the budget outlooks. And so I want to make sure that it has dedicated and continuing funding. And so I'm not opposed to finding a more reasonable or an equitable funding source. And so, you know, I think, I would love to continue working with you on finding a better funding source because, you know, that I was just made aware of that as well. And so if we can get it from somewhere where it's more kind of a better spot, I'm fine with that.
Representative Olson, any follow-up?
That sounds great.
Chair Kosnick?
Thank you. And members, this is an author's amendment, so out of courtesy, I'm going to recommend that we just do a voice vote and add that on there. I think Representative Olson expresses some very good concerns and that the author recognizes. So I just want to put that out there, and then we'll talk about the other amendments afterwards.
Any other member discussion? Representative Green?
I do have a question, but it has nothing to do with the amendment. So do you want me to hold it?
Yeah, let's hold that. We can vote on the A1 amendment here and then move on, or the A3. Are you going to withdraw the A3 and then take the author's amendment? Or I'm kind of, I don't quite understand what you were saying, Representative Kosnick.
Representative Kosnick, or Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. I think it'd be appropriate to, you could do a voice vote on your author's amendment, and then we'll proceed to the following amendments.
Sounds good.
Great. Let's go ahead with the voting on, let's see, the motion to adopt the A1 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. And then, Chair Kosnick, I see you have the A3 amendment to the A1 amendment.
The A2 amendment. Madam Chair, I would move the A2 amendment.
That's fine. Please proceed.
Thank you. And committee and the public, regardless of your support or lack of support of the overall bill, we are facing a rather significant tails deficit. We are in a structural deficit, and the funds, whether they, as the bill was originally written, we don't have our budget targets yet, but in this environment, we don't particularly have additional money to start up new programs. And so what the A2 amendment, if we were to include this in an omnibus bill, would make it a one-time appropriation if we decided to. As opposed to adding to the structural deficit in the out years. So that is my amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Chair Cagle?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like I said, I'm willing to work with anybody who wants to help me find funding for this. I do think it's super important that it is an ongoing program so that the opportunities from, you know, other communities can get the opportunity to access that and develop their projects as well. I think it, you know, unless we plan to increase staffing to local municipalities and, you know, then I think this is really a wise use of our money when we can spend, you know, $2.5 million and help all those folks on the map there for 1 year. It's 2.55 for the biennium. And so, you know, that and that map is just mostly the phase one projects. A few of the asterisk ones there are the phase two. But, you know, this bill is being laid over, and I am willing to find the money somewhere, but I do hope that we can find it ongoing.
Yeah.
Chair Kosnick.
Madam Chair, Chair Cagle, technically the A2 amendment is, because of your author's amendment, is not actually relevant anymore, or maybe not even in order, but you raised the issue. So I will withdraw the A2 amendment, but I think we need to have that discussion about one-time
Absolutely.
Funding.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The A2 amendment has been withdrawn. Next is the A3 amendment. Representative Olson.
So thank you, Madam Chair. The A3 amendment is actually the amendment to the A1 amendment.
Hey, there
so
we go.
This one appropriately amends the new language to get rid of the ongoing appropriation. And a lot of what Chair Kosnick said rings true with the financial situation that we're in. But I'm a true believer that this is it's a newer program. We're seeing great success so far. Mm-hmm. But I would hate to unleash the reins without having a couple more iterations of seeing the value of this. And, you know, my hope would be that 2 years from now you'll be here and maybe I'll be here too, and we can have the same discussion about ongoing spending in the next session. But I think that we've seen good success with the program. I want to make sure that we have reoccurring success before we let the reins loose and wind up the ship and let her go. So I would like a roll call on this amendment, please, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. A roll call has been requested. Is there any other discussion on the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, I understand where you're coming from, Representative Olson, but like I said before, this is a really valuable program, and unless we're going to try and, up staff across the state or, make sure that our local municipalities and regions are getting the resources they need, this is kind of one of their only options to really turn to in order to get that capacity building. And so I'm hopeful that we can get the ongoing funding. But again, I'm willing to work with anybody we can to get funding for this program. So
any other discussion on the A3 amendment? If not, we will take roll call on the A3 amendment.
Chair Cagle.
No.
Chair Kosnick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ream?
No.
Vice Chair Myers?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Fogelman?
Yes.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative Jones?
No.
Representative Joy? Representative Kraft?
No.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Sensormura?
No.
Representative Scraba?
Yes.
Representative Tab? He is excused. Okay.
Thank you. There are 8 no's and 7 ayes, and the motion.
Oh, no, sorry. Other way.
Sorry. 8 ayes, 7 no's, and the motion does not prevail.
No, it does prevail. Sorry.
Yeah. seeing no further discussion, Chair Cagle renews her motion that HF 1360, as amended, be laid over.
Madam Chair.
Oh.
We have a quick recess for like a minute to discuss something with you.
Sure. Chair Kosnick is requesting a recess, and that is granted. Wait, Thank you.
You're the only one that can call recess, right?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Oh. All right. Can you recess?
I'm calling a recess.
So it's got to be 9.
I read the rules.
Okay. I think so.
it's getting older. So it doesn't matter. So I'm reconvening the Transportation Committee today. We had a little mix-up, but due to the power-sharing agreement, we actually need a majority of votes to pass the amendment. We need 9 votes. And so the A3 amendment did not actually prevail. And I'd like to, it's not adopted. I would like to continue the discussion. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question for the author on line 2.5 and 2.6. It says methods to incorporate consideration of sustainability, resiliency, and adaption to impacts of climate change. I just wonder what some of the methods are that are talked about there.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Murphy, I think the mayor from Vergas kind of reiterated it really well. How they were doing some energy efficiencies to bring down cost for their you know, overall overhead for the city. And so just kind of some of those things, really looking at ways how we can save money for our localities through efficiencies and through better delivery of resources and things along those lines.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. Do you have a follow-up, Representative Murphy?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Cagle. And that sounds great. I appreciate my two towns getting some action out of this, too. What I want to know is if the cities have the final say, or does the University of Minnesota actually have any dictates or guidelines with regard to what they expect before the dollars are allocated?
And I will hand that one off to my testifier.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. Yes, and can you please introduce yourself again to the committee?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. Kyle Shelton. I'm the director of the Center for Transportation Studies and, again, one of the entities helping coordinate. Representative, to your question, the way that the process works is that the communities forward a general idea, a challenge, a thing they want to work on, in the example of Vergas, saying we want to talk about energy costs and energy usage. We then identify team members at the university who are most appropriate to support them in that, and the process that they go through is community-led and community-prioritized, where they say, here's what we want, how are you going to provide us those answers, and that is what the team then responds to. So the folks who worked on that project were able to say, here are ways to get to those answers. Does that still meet your need? And there's always kind of a last step where the community says, yes, you heard us, that scope works, let's go forward with it, or hey, actually, before we go through that, I don't think you're answering the question. So we have multiple steps where the communities can give us some insights of, you're answering the question we asked you to, so thank you. Or, hey, we need to work a little bit further on that. And in the first round, I think there were only a handful where we kind of kept workshopping the scope after the first round, but all of them are really driven by what the community is looking for, and we're working very hard to ensure that the support they're getting is what they're asking for.
Representative Joy, or I'm sorry, Representative Murphy.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So is the, thank you. We talking to me or him?
Representative Murphy.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So is energy the primary climate change, position that you talk about? And does it have to include some sort of climate change or sustainability goal in for them to actually obtain any funding?
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. I believe I'm thinking through the wording of your question. I believe the answer on both is no. So other examples of climate-related impacts are projects that have been working on stormwater and flood issues, thinking about how to build a more resilient downtown in a few examples, a couple park systems where they have been having flooding issues and just dealing with those impacts on various infrastructure in that regard. And then in terms of energy and sustainability, that's one of the categories that we have thrown out to communities to say, if you have a project in this area, we'd love to talk to you about it, and it's eligible, but it's not the only one. So more sort of traditional infrastructure challenges around a particular local street or highway project, other water systems, all of those things, the landfill example, are all possibilities. We have left the definition of infrastructure fairly broad so that we can start the conversation with the place that the community starts. So there is no specific requirement of one area or another.
Representative Murphy.
The last question. Thank you, Madam Chair. So there are no dictates necessarily from the U of M. It is a guideline, and you sort based on those guidelines, but there's no dictates. You don't tell them, well, you need to do this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One, there's not a fiscal note I see attached with this. Could Andrew Lee go through and explain to us where this would be pulled out of what account and what the impacts would be to that account?
Yes, can you speak to the bill, please?
Madam Chair and Representative Joy, yes. So the what is referenced in the A1 amendment on the second page, starting on line 2.4 and going through the rest of the amendment, and you can see on line 2.13 a reference to statutes 174.49. That is the transportation advancement account, and specifically the small cities portion of that. And if it'd be helpful for the committee for the numbers of those as of the February forecast, the total transportation advancement account is funded by two revenue streams, the delivery fee and a portion of the sales tax on auto parts. The total amount for the transportation advancement account in fiscal year 2025 is estimated to be about $41 million, and then that is allocated to metro counties, county stated highway, larger cities, small cities, township roads, and food delivery support. The specific line on small cities, which would make up 27% of the allocation of the TAA, in fiscal year 2025 received about $11 million, is forecast to receive in 2026 $14.8 million, in 2027 $21.1 million, in 2028 $28.7 million, and in 2029 $36.8 million.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one of the things I think about is, you know, as he just said, Mr. Lee said, is it's come out of delivery fee. And I know earlier in this committee, we've had bills come up and we've talked to many commissioners about road funding and that they're maybe short $112 million of road funding. We got to continue to make sure we take care of roads and bridges. And we heard that from both sides of the aisles. And the other thing is we've heard the delivery fee is underperforming. And so I understand creating new programs and want to create a new $5 million program and take it out of these accounts. But I fear right now with the environment we're in, until we know how this delivery fee is performing, to be creating a new thing to give it to a study of the U of M and take $5 million just to do a study instead of fixing potholes and fixing what we heard earlier in this committee. So I understand you're going to lay this over for some more work. But I really strongly encourage us to try to look at other way to fund this, as we heard before that from the commissioners, that the roads and bridges are underfunded, and they have been for a long time, and we haven't taken care of that, and we need to, before we start giving money to the U of M and start doing more studies, I think we need to revisit this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. I didn't hear a question, Yes,
I'd like to follow up to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Joy. It's not a study. They're actually providing services to communities. And so it's actually tactical work out in the communities, not a study.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. Next is Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. And I will go quickly so we can move on. But I just wanted to compliment this program. You know, I sit on the education committees, and to have crossover between education and transportation and to see it happening in real life is super impressive. I think we need more of that here at the Capitol. So I just wanted to compliment the work from the U. And then, and looking at the entire state, and this is a program that I think, you know, my heart is up in northern Minnesota too. We own property in Crow Wing County. And so I just really wanted to compliment that program. The only question that I had quickly was the selection process. Like, when you guys have the different cities that come, like, how many did you have to turn down? Because that's just to look at the need for this.
Mr. Shelton.
Madam Chair and Representative, thank you for the question. I'm going to try to remember back to the first time. I believe it was 104 applications in the first round, and we've ended up moving forward with about 34 of those in round one. And I believe we had somewhere in the mid-20s for round two. We had we spent the a large chunk of the first round funding, or first biennium funding in round one, so we had less funding available for round two. Almost 150 communities, and at this point about 45 projects either active or near start.
Thank you, Mr. Shelton. Representative Green?
Thank you. That's great. So there is such a significant need and a want from this from smaller communities all over the state. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green. Next up, we have Vice Chair Myers.
Thank you, Chair Rehm. Thank you, Chair Cagle. Like the concept, but just wanted to make a few comments. I have 11 cities. They range from 500 people to about 9,000. Staff can be very different in those cities. I mean, I can think of one city that has 8,000 people and they've got, eight, nine staff members. My own city has, 1,200 people, 1,300 people with two staff. A little bit of my concern is that 15,000 person threshold. We talk about the need, we talk about the impact. I'd be more inclined to support something like this for those true smaller cities. Because again, I see it every day back in my district with the level of support that they have in there. And you talked about it, we're not gonna be hiring more staff within those communities. But if the need is there, I think addressing truly the true small cities, I know some of the people that testified, I mean, their communities were 350, 3,000, 1,800 that really needed the help. So my hope is as this keeps, progressing, that we can kind of look at the, smaller, population threshold to really, because some of my cities are struggling just to even do some of their daily stuff. And then if they want to go above and beyond and do grant programs, but again, a lot of those are those ones under 5,000.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I will renew my motion that House File 1360 as amended. Wait, there's more discussion?
Yeah, she thought you were.
Chair Kosnick, would you like to proceed?
Madam Chair, I think it was, thought you were following up to Representative Myers.
Oh.
Just a question. Cities that need, or maybe cities that need additional staff help or lack expertise in a particular area, are there other grants that they can apply for, or can they contract directly with the University of Minnesota for some of these variety of services that are being provided?
Chair Kosnick, is that a question for Chair?
That'd be a question for the author or the testifier, Madam Chair.
Chair Cagle?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last year, we did fund a program through MnDOT for $30,000 grants for consultants. But I think that since we already have the experts and the people that can really lift up our communities already embedded in our communities through extension services and RDOs and all that good stuff, that those are the people we should really be tapping into, not the consultants that, just come and go as they please. We want this to be community-driven, community-led, and the university folks that are involved in it are embedded in those communities. They're not coming up from the university down here, the Twin Cities campus. They're at extension services within those communities. And so the next bill, we'll kind of see how that actually works.
Chair Kosnick, do you have a follow-up?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Chair Cagle, that was part of my question, is can they contract directly with the University of Minnesota? I think they do provide very good services in that. I'll just close. I think there are a lot of good consulting or services providing to help small cities and even larger cities that lack expertise in a particular project. For this, I have a rather large city as one of my cities, and we still reach out to other experts because even with the staff that we have in Lakeville, we're not familiar with every aspect. And so almost on every project, I bet we're contracting and seeking additional input. But this is on a whole variety of continuum of community and city needs, not just transportation, not just building a road or bridge or bike trail, a lot of things that are beyond the scope of what this committee does. And that's kind of where my concern is, in addition to the funding mechanisms that I think we'll need to work out a little bit. So have some concerns, and maybe we can work them out. Maybe we can't, but I'll be happy to continue to keep trying.
Thank you, Chair Kozak. And Chair Cagle, would you like to close your bill? I don't see any further discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members, for this conversation. You know, I think, you know, one of the challenges that small communities face as well is that they don't have the budget to pay for consultants. And so with this being a grant program where it's just literally like applying for services, it and applying for those services with the experts who have the knowledge, and taking advantage of our natural human capital here in the state of Minnesota. And so I think this is a super, super important program that's getting a lot of good. And I know some of it is outside the scope of transportation, but really what we are doing in transportation is providing connectivity to people. And a lot of these programs are making sure that people stay connected. And not only that, but building community as well. When I was in Knife River, they, you know, said that their first community meeting had over 100 people attend it, and that's a town of 300. And so we're building connections, we're building community, and with that, then the communities can come and start to tell us what they need, because we tend to really tell communities what to do instead of listening to them. And so this is grassroots. This is using the experts and the resource in our state, and it's getting these projects to the finish line so that we're not committing a bunch of state resources to do the planning, development, all the outreach and those things, and that we're just really using the human capital. And so with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1360 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. So Chair Cagle renews her motion that HF 1360 as amended be laid over. Next up, we have another bill with Chair Cagle, HF 1801. Chair Cagle, would you like to move your bill?
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. So this bill is for the city of Crookston. Again, why am I authoring a bill for a project in the city of Crookston? But it's because of this program and how this project developed that I wanted to be the author of it. And so this bill would direct $2.7 million of Trunk Highway to complete the Highway 2 project. And with me, I have Carrie and Christy from the city of Crookston, and I will turn it over to them.
Thank you. Hi, really, again, Carrie Kirschbaum, Community Development Director for the city of Crookston. And indeed, we were meeting with representative to talk about the project, and out of a lot of transportation projects have come out of this. And one of them for us is, well, first off, let me just look at my script here because I'm nervous. I just want to thank you for the opportunity. I want to also thank you for offering to sponsor this bill for us, and also our representative Gander has signed in with you, so I'm really thankful for that. We have a Highway 2 corridor project that is before you today, and we started out with the project thinking we were in good shape. We have a lot of tragedies have gone on in our city, and I'm going to turn it over to Christy to kind of talk about the background, but we had a meeting about 3 months ago where we thought we were funded. We found out we were about $5 million short. And it gave us a heart attack, and we've had a lot of things happen there. So, Christy, I'm going to ask you to give the background on that.
Sure. Yes. Thank you, Ms. Kirschbaum. Next, we have Christy Jurdy. Please introduce yourself to the committee?
Yes. I'm Christy Jurdy. I'm a council member for the city of Crookston, and I appreciate your time here today. The Highway 2 Corridor project is a pretty huge thing for us. I've been on council now, this is my second term, and it took a lot for us to even get here. And so the fact that we have this opportunity to not only make our downtown safer, but also to provide opportunity for revitalization is a huge key. This Highway 2 Corridor, as you can see on our handout that we provided, goes through our downtown and serves as a major way for our trucking and commerce through the downtown. But with that, we've unfortunately had several incidents with pedestrians. Unfortunately, one led to a fatality. We had two pedestrians within the same week that were hit. And then most recently in 2020, we had a 10-year-old girl who was on her bike on the corner, on the sidewalk, that was dragged under a major truck and for several blocks. And so this is a place that we have a school downtown where kids are walking to school, they're riding their bikes, and it is not a safe place. My children go to this school, and there's no way at this point that I would ever allow them to be in the downtown because of the major safety issues that we have. And so this is way past due for us as a city, and a very important piece for us. So I would say that's a big part. What this actually provides, not only as far as the safety concerns, is a lot of improvements with ADA. We have sidewalks that are crumbling, which makes it hard for our elderly citizens to get to the local businesses. We also have a lot of residential areas in our downtown. This reconstruction would also provide the opportunity to address a lot of these dangerous intersections, as well as provide and dedicate pedestrian travel areas. So it's a very big piece for a very small town, and we're really asking that you consider this. And I'll go ahead and share also with Carrie, if you want to go ahead and talk about a little bit more about the financial need. Yeah,
thank you, Ms. Sturdy. Please go through the chair. Ms. Kirschbaum, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Chairwoman. I'm so appreciative. Originally, this project was estimated to cost $6.7 million. Crookston's share would have been about $2.5 million. The city proactively secured the $2.3 million and funding to cover our portion. However, as the design progressed, costs have risen due to inflation. And then unexpectedly, utility relocations were going to come up because of the project. And we also had a change because we may have even more costs because of having to move different utilities because of ADA compliance. MnDOT's cost participation policy increasing the local financing responsibility for our intersection and our crosswalks. The total project is now $14.5 million. If you can imagine the sticker shock that we had when we found this out a few months ago, it was dramatic. This project is now $14.5 million, with Crookston's share being $6 million. And more than doubled the original estimate. To help bridge this gap, we've reallocated $1 million from city transportation projects, rising our total funding to $3.3 million. Unfortunately, this will significantly impact our planned local street improvements. So it's pretty urgent for us. We're asking for the legislative support now because this project is scheduled to begin bidding in 2026, and construction is scheduled for 2027. This project is essentially fixing long-standing safety concerns and revitalizing downtown Crookston for pedestrians and for businesses. So this is a strong transportation project for us.
Thank you for the testimony. Are there any other members or members of the public who would like to testify? Otherwise, we'll move to any discussion among members. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when we're talking about these kind of one-off projects. This is something that the great former chair, Frank Hornstein, didn't really enjoy at all, identifying single projects and then using trunk highway funds or other transportation funds in order to do. Now, with that being said, I'm assuming that your city is using, so MnDOT has identified a project and your city is trying to use extra trunk highway funds to help you with the infrastructure that is usually your portion or has traditionally been the portion that the city is required to play, to put up to play. And I think that we definitely as a body need to figure something out with that. It is a significant hindrance to cities when we're identifying state highway projects and then MnDOT comes in and says, just so you know, your project of upgrade or your portion of upgrading the infrastructure, should you choose to do so, would be serious cash. So I understand that. But at the same time, I do have concerns about opening Pandora's box here. We've spent years and years and years not doing one-off projects. That's more of a Senate thing. The senators always try and throw their little projects in there. And Julie Rosen did get one in the, you know, in 2022 for my district. So that is what it is. But I think that we as a whole, as a body, need to figure out the answer to this for more than just one city, while at the same time taking into account the fact that this opens up a precedence that maybe we don't want to open up, taking trunk highway funds from MnDOT, saying this is how you're going to allocate those funds. It's a dangerous place. I'm not trying to say we shouldn't. I'm saying we need to look at it, and I think that it sets a new tone. Because a lot of cities have a lot of road projects, and I could find a bunch of road projects in my district too. And so generally speaking, we find a lot of these things in capital investment, but that's kind of just my two cents on this. I think that the committee as a whole should look at this, but I'm tossed either way, because I understand your plight. I was a small town city mayor, and we were looking at a significant road fund that was going to cost us nearly $1 million that we didn't have. And at the end of the day, the project didn't happen because we couldn't come up with those funds, and that is a tragedy as well. So this is just me trying to make a point out that if we want to cherry pick, we can cherry pick. Maybe we don't want to cherry pick, but we need to address this issue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you. My goal is to find projects that need a little bit of funding to get them over the finish line. And I don't think I've been a part of a bill yet that through transportation that hasn't probably had a few constituent requests, as Chair Newman liked to call them. And so I am not a big fan of them either way, but I do want to make sure that these programs that just need a little bit of funding to get them over the finish line get done now, so that it doesn't end up costing us three times as much in, 6 months when all the tariffs hit and stuff like that. And so I'm really hoping that we can just renew my motion to lay this over, unless there's any other quick discussion.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. We actually do have a couple of people on the list. If you could keep your comments brief, next would be Representative Joy.
Yeah, we have other committee members that need to get to other places, and so if we can move this along, I'd really appreciate it.
Representative Cagle, Chair, thank you. I agree with this. Hawley ran into this when I was a mayor. They came and redid Highway 10. Next thing you know, MnDOT handed us $1 million bill because they moved the stoplight and everything like that. We're not expecting that during the whole phase of the thing. Basically, had to raise our levy and do what we could do. So I think this probably is not just one city coming to us. I think we could see more and more of these. I think it's something we definitely have to figure out, because I do. I really think, I know Highway 10's being done, 2's being done. We're going to see more of these. Cities are like, holy, this went over. And every time we push it off, it pushes more to it. So I appreciate this, and I look forward to working on where we can get more of this, take care of. But I agree with Representative Olson. If we set this precedence today, then is Hawley going to come back and say, hey, we spent $1 million? Is Glendon going to come back and say, we spent $800,000? Where is it going to stop? So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. In the interest of keeping us on schedule here, next is Chair Kosnick. If we could keep our comments brief.
Just to clarify, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think another rep had a question, but just looking at the handout and the language of the bill is just for the road, but the handout also has drinking water, sanitary sewer water, and storm water. Can you just kind of clarify for the committee what the ask is in the totality of the project?
We're asking for 2.7. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's $2.7 million to complete the project.
Chair Kosnick?
We're just laying it over. We'll dig into it a little bit later.
Yep, and so I'd like to make the motion then. Chair Cagle, do you have any closing comments?
I'd just like to renew my motion that House File 1801 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. So Chair Cagle makes the motion to lay over this bill for possible inclusion. Now to the next bill.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
All right, next on the agenda is House File 182, Representative Ray Rauer. Welcome to the committee, Representative Ray Rauer. If you could please, I will move that House File 182 be laid over for possible inclusion. I have one testifier signed up in advance, and so Representative Ray Rauer, if you could speak to your bill, please.
Thank you so much, Chair Cagle, and thank you to everyone on the committee.
today. So HF 182 is a bill to request $10 million in trunk highway bonds to complete a full interchange at Trunk Highway 610 and East River Road in the city of Coon Rapids. The city is the lead on the project. This project request has been around for quite a while. They've been working on this specific request for about a decade. The full project request has been around for longer than that. It is a total of a $37.3 million project. The city has previously requested in the last biennium $23 million from the state. Since then, the city has been able to secure funding from a variety of sources. You do have a handout, I believe, in your packet that delineates the different amounts and the sources that they have been able to procure. They do not have another source to go to at this time, so this request is for the final $10 million needed to fully complete the project. At the time of the original construction, Highway 610 only went west from Coon Rapids. We were the terminus, so at the time they only needed lanes to and from the west. Highway 610 opened across the Mississippi River in 1986 or 87, while Highway 10 going to the east opened in 1999. So as you can see, this has been a long time in need. So as of now, on the westbound side of the highway, you can enter going west, but you can't get off the highway. And on the eastbound side of 610, you can get off, but you cannot enter to go eastbound. It's incomplete and the interchange is messy. This affects our emergency response times. If police, fire do end up on the wrong side of the Highway 610 bridge for an emergency, they have to take a convoluted route around local roads to get to the other side of the bridge. The current interchange will adds to pollution and miles traveled. Local roads get additional use and experience significant semi-truck traffic and backups. You can take a look at the handout titled "The Cost of Doing Business." Coon Rapids' largest commercial and industrial business district is located along Trunk Highway 610 between East River Road and Coon Rapids Boulevard. RMS is one of our local manufacturer. It has a 360,000 square foot plant, which is located adjacent to this interchange, and makes over 3,000 shipments and deliveries each year. This would save them significant time, money, pollution, and prevent the clogging up of the local roads as they navigate those local roads around to get onto the highway. Finally, the proposed interchange came out of many city meetings, which I got to be a part of as a former Coon Rapids City Council member, to meet with residents and garner their feedback. The design has been modified to this current version based on those discussions and feedback from our residents, and it is now widely approved by our residents and is the best option. With that, I'd like to turn it over, Chair, to my testifier, Tim Himmer, Public Works Director for the City of Coon Rapids.
Thank you, and I just want to make sure that everybody knows that we're going to try and move Representative Kraft's bill at about 2:15 so that we give enough time for testifiers. And so with that, Mr. Himmer, if you would like to identify yourself for the record and please be brief with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair Cagle. I'm Tim Himmer. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Coon Rapids. I'm appreciative of the time, so thank you all. I will be brief. Representative Raybrower covered it very well. I've been with the city for nearly 13 years, and this has been a project that's been happening since that time. So we're not looking for a new interchange. We're just trying to complete an existing interchange that exists. Everything is directional one way. So as she mentioned, not only does it improve access for the local community, local businesses, but also for the highway users themselves. And we're also looking at a grade-separated trail to the Mississippi Regional system as well. So improving access for both the highway users as well as the local users. Safety, as she mentioned, emergency response to large segments of that highway you can't get to. You have to go backwards on the local roads. And in most instances, we're calling neighboring communities for those responses. And then finally, the functionality of both those regional systems and the local system. This is not a city thing necessarily. We're just trying to keep local routes and regional routes separate. What we're finding is large volumes of traffic, particularly trucks driving through residential neighborhoods. It puts undue stress on other interchanges, particularly Highway 10 at Foley Boulevard, Highway 10 at University. So the safety within the local system as well as the regional system. I'm appreciative we've received $2.5 million to date from the state. We've put that to good use. We've done a robust public engagement. We've fostered new partnerships. We've leveraged those to find new dollars. This will complete our funding package. We're at 60% design today. We'll be shovel ready by the end of the year. This could be bid over the winter and potentially be construction as early as next spring. So the handouts are there. I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First on the list is Representative Olson. This bill is being laid over, so just please make it brief.
I'll make it really quick. Thank you, Madam Chair. Holy smokes. So I imagine neither of you were able to make it to MnDOT's meeting in 1975 when this road was first laid down to present your concerns about not having this this ramp. But my question is, what does your district engineer have to say about this? Why isn't this on their radar for something that needs to be done? Is it on their radar for future creations? Because generally the way this kind of stuff works is your district engineer has identified projects and needs, and then they allocate district funds that they have to construct projects such as this. Have you had a conversation with your district engineer, and what is the culmination? Are we trying to circumvent the district in order to force the hand, or do they have a reason?
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Rayrauer, or to your testifier.
Representative Olson, yes, we have been working with our district engineer. It's not a priority for them on their system. 610 to them is complete. There are multiple cities that still believe they want better access to 610. So it's not a priority for them as it is for us. So for us to move this forward and try to find those dollars and make it for our local community, that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you. And I authored this bill back in the last, well, when I had Coon Rapids in my district. So any further questions? Representative Joy, quickly, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier or the author, will the greenhouse gas mitigation add any cost to this when you're doing a new project like this on 610?
Mr. Himmer?
Yes, Representative. In our freight application, it's very difficult as you're looking at the greenhouse gas. The greenhouse gas savings are from the truck traffic that's going to and from, getting off of those local systems, that stop, go, that idling. So it's that constant stopping and going. We quantified that, but it's very subjective in how you calculate that. There's not an additional cost related to this. It's just the savings of those additional trips, keeping them on the highway system, not having to go through the stop signs and the congestion.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 182 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is Representative Stevenson. With House File 1651, I will make the motion that House File 1651 be considered for possible inclusion. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is a pedestrian bridge in downtown Anoka, the Halloween capital of the world, over the Rum River Dam, which is part of a larger project with a total cost of $50 million. The city is seeking $10 million to help defray the cost of the pedestrian bridge component of this. The nearest crossing of the Rum River to this pedestrian bridge is where County Road 10, which is Main Street in downtown Anoka, crosses the Rum River. It immediately intersects with U.S. Highway 169. So it's a four-lane divided road, not exactly the most pedestrian-friendly place. This is also a key trail connection in the area. There's a scenic trails, as you can imagine, along the Rum River in downtown Anoka. This is also adjacent to the Social District, so people walking, that's a good thing around the Anoka Social District. The last thing I'll mention, just specific to Representative Olson, since he's a Civil War buff, this is steps away from the site where Aaron Greenwald was the first person to volunteer to serve Minnesota during the Civil War. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. And this would be coming from active transportation funding, correctly?
Correct? Thank you. Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions to the bill? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the little bit of history tourism there. I appreciate it. But my question, so it says we're going from the general fund to active transportation, then from active transportation to the creation of this bridge, right? You sitting in your position, is there going to be any general fund dollars for us to get this project done?
Chair Stevenson, loaded
Thank
question
you,
there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson. We'll see.
No, of course not. Any other questions or discussion of the bill? Representative Anderson?
I have a quick question. So we were talking a couple meetings ago about the change where we're going to have to mitigate, you know, future. Isn't the project like this something that would, you know,
correct.
Okay, down the road, though, where it's automatic and we're not sort of, I guess that's a question from.
Well, I think, thank you, Representative Anderson. I think that adding pedestrian bridges would definitely be a greenhouse gas mitigator. Mm-hmm. And so that would be something that would maybe help offset some of the gas either from the Highway 65 project, being that it's in the same region, or, you know, the East River Road off-ramp and on-ramp that is also just right down the street from that pedestrian overlook. So, yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Koznick, you look like you're ready to go.
Just, you know, we had a project down in Randolph, and it was water going over this thing. Representative Stevens, thank you for this damn project.
Had to do it. All right, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1651 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next on the agenda is next on the agenda is Representative Wolgamott with House File 1642. I will move that House File 1642 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Wolgamott, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present House File 1642, which would fund $35 million for safety and access improvements on Minnesota Highway 10 in Southeast St. Cloud. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair and members, this bill that's before you is the third installment of appropriations that have been made by this Transportation Committee in the state of Minnesota. A little context for you. We've funded $1 million to study the corridor, and then an additional $6 million for planning, design, and right-of-way acquisition for this project. We're seeking to have now phase one. We're ready to go. And over the course of that money that has been spent, Madam and Mr. Chair and members, we found some pretty alarming statistics, and I believe getting passed out to you, if it hasn't already, is the one-pager from the department from that study. A couple things I want to bring to your attention. From 2017 through 2021, there were 315 crashes along that corridor, and several of the intersections and segments experienced fatal and severe injury crashes at a rate above the statewide average. And unfortunately, on top of that, there was an additional fatal crash in 2022. We don't want to stand by and have more serious injuries, more deaths. We want to step up and take action. We put this bill together in conjunction with a broad coalition of local governments and business owners and residents. You should have a full list of that with you in the material being handed out. And in the interest of time, Madam Chair, I will truncate my testimony to that and turn it over to my constituent and community leader, John Peterson, with your permission, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Peterson. I work for TCC Materials, which is one of the industrial operations along Highway 10 at the peak, our operation. I've worked nearly 30 years at that location, where we have about 80 employees and about 20 highway heavy vehicles that have 3 to 4 trips daily. So there's essentially 60 to 80 exits and entrances to the Highway 10 in that corridor, along with 100 employees. It's a dangerous situation for many, many businesses along there, as well as an industrial park that we have clearly demonstrated. To some of the questions that you've asked, we have been working with MnDOT and the district engineer, as you can see, the study that was produced. And want to thank Representative Wolgamott for his perseverance in this project and working to move this forward. The statistics he represented, it represents 80 accidents annually in this corridor, which is very, very significant. And as you'll see on the documentation, 16% higher than average on Minnesota trunk highways. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will move to questions on the bill. Oh, I'm sorry. We still have one more testifier in line. Landon Bowe, if you could please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Landon Bode. I'm the Director of Safety for Palmer Bus. And I just wanted to demonstrate our support for this project as well for the safety improvements along Highway 10. We have a site that is located near the intersection of 32 and Highway 10. And we transport about over 1,800 students a day. We've got 31 buses that we have to roll out of our site location in the AM and also into the PM. And we have a lot of challenges associated with getting out onto Highway 10. The 32nd Street is our primary access point. Due to the lack of acceleration lanes, the median is very narrow. Our buses have to approach this thing and be at a 45-degree angle just to get access out there, causing a lot of other issues as far as with safety. The corridors has over 25,000 ADT, and finding gaps in traffic to access this is very challenging for us. And being that we're in Minnesota, adding the snow and ice only compounds to these particular problems. Again, we try to mitigate a lot of our safety-related issues by trying to disperse our buses to different locations. We try to get buses to utilize the 42nd Street location as well. Again, you know, same type of issues, lack of median widths, no acceleration lanes, all are causing significant challenges for our drivers, and we're very fearful of, you know, future accidents. We're very supportive in this bill. These various phases with this, and if whatever we can do to support this through the development of interchanges, frontage roads, as well as acceleration lanes, we are fully supportive of this. And again, it's a very dangerous corridor, and I just wanted to let you guys all know that we are very supportive of this project. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we will move to member questions. I have a question. Representative Wolgamott, is this project able to be scalable? It's got a pretty hefty price tag, and so I was just curious if it would be scalable.
Well, thank you very much for that question, Madam Chair. We have scaled the project. As you can see, the full project has been broken down into a number of segments that total $160 million. So we are taking our approach to eating the whale one bite at a time, so to speak, and we're seeking, adjusted for inflation, $35 million to complete segment one. To my knowledge, I have not seen that the segment one could be scaled down anymore. Again, we've taken this $160 million project, scaled it down to $35 million for phase one.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You voiced my significant concerns regarding the substantial rating of the coffers with the price tag of this. But on top of that, I see that it was originally read and sent to the Capital Investment Committee. Obviously, it was an error due to the fact that you're looking for trunk highway bonds to be issued. But do you have a similar bill like this in Capital Investment? Are you trying to spread the numbers to try and hope for a hit? Or where is your district engineer on this kind of an allocation of funds?
Representative Wolgamott.
Madam Chair, and I guess I could probably defer to our nonpartisan staff to give a more thorough answer, but it's my understanding. I re-referred the bill to this committee because it would not be eligible for general obligation bonds, given that it is a state highway and that general obligation bonds are only able to be applied to local roads. This is not a local road. It is a state road. As far as the district engineer, I can turn that over to my testifier who's been in constant communication.
Just a note that I travel this corridor quite a bit every weekend, and it's been under construction for a long time, so I'm fairly certain that it is probably in MnDOT's plans, but we can verify that offline with MnDOT. Mr. Timmer, is that right?
Peterson,
yeah. I'm sorry, that was the last.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, we have been in communication with the MnDOT planner in District 3 that has facilitated the study and then have supported the funding for design and engineering. So we are in communication with them. Where it actually falls in the plan, I couldn't tell you specifically. Yeah, we have been in constant communication with the planner and ultimately the engineer on this.
Thank you.
And I would add, Madam Chair.
Representative Wogman.
And we've been in communication not just on this particular legislation, but we've really been in communication for about 4 or 5 years. As we were getting that, when I originally mentioned, we got the $1 million for the study and then the $6 million for the planning, design, and right-of-way acquisition. We've been in working with them for years and years and years on this.
Thank you, Representative Wogamout. We have Representative Anderson, Representative Murphy, and I'm sure Representative Kosnick. And then we'll move on to Representative Craftspill. So, Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I think my question was just answered. I just wanted to clarify. This is just like the last project, right, or some of the others where they aren't in their MnDOT.
I think that before
not a priority.
Yeah, so before we move any projects into an omnibus bill, we will get a list from MnDOT on what is ready and what isn't. That has been kind of the practice, that we make sure that whatever constituent projects that we are awarding money to, that they are ready to go and that they are part of MnDOT's plans. So. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. My question is what will the greenhouse gas mitigation pieces be in this project?
Representative Wogman, I don't think that's something you can answer. I think that's probably something down to more of something you'd have to follow up with some of the engineers and everything offline. If that's something that you want for every earmark project that we get, we can probably arrange that in advance instead of wasting committee time with the same question. So,
yeah, that would be a great idea. That'd be great. So we said $6 million. Hey, one more question. Thank you.
Thank you.
You said $6 million. Any of the $6 million used for that?
What $6 million are you referring
to, Representative? The $6 million for design?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Peterson.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I sell building materials for a living, and so I'm a volunteer on this project. So I'm not a lobbyist. I'm not a registered lobbyist. So I'm a little bit unfamiliar with your question. Representing a bunch of people that use this corridor every day that experience 80 accidents a year. I don't think they care about the greenhouse mitigation on this particular project. I realize it's important for some and not as important for others. So I'm sorry, I can't answer that for you.
All right, thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, and I just made a connection. Are we in front of former Senator Peterson?
Yes, sir.
Well, welcome back to the Capitol. I didn't recognize you with the beard. But, Madam Chair, I'm just kind of looking at the list of bills here, and I kind of think I know what you're doing. I grew up in Anoka. I went to school in St. Cloud, and you're trying to butter me up.
Oh, there you go. I just thought I was clearing my way to the cabin. thank you very much, Representative Wogamott. With that, I will lay House File 1642 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next on the calendar is Representative Kraft with House File 2130. Thank you, Representative Kraft.
And I've asked a couple of my testifiers to come up with me.
All right. Timing Representative Kraft, if you would like to introduce you can move your bill.
I'd like to move House File 2130 to be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety.
All right, thank you. And if you would like to go ahead with your testifiers.
I do have a A1 amendment that I'd like to move to get it in get the bill in the form I would like it, and I'll mention the amendment during my discussion.
All right, Representative Kraft moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, would you like to explain your A1 amendment? The bill?
During this, yeah.
Okay, so any discussion to the A1 amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Representative Kraft, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. On the night of September 1st, 2024, Stephen Bailey got behind the wheel of his car with a blood alcohol level of 0.325, more than four times the legal limit. He went to Park Tavern in St. Louis Park in my district, couldn't find a parking spot, and then drove at high speed through the outdoor patio, killing Park Tavern server Christina Folkerts and Methodist Hospital unit coordinator Gabe Harvey, and injuring 9 other people. His horrific decision has left just a gaping hole in my community, in the lives of so many people, and especially in the lives of the families impacted. And what has made this so hard for my community is how random it was. If you live in St. Louis Park, then you have memories at Park Tavern, and likely have spent time on that patio, as I have. Unbelievably, Bailey had 5 prior Minnesota DWI convictions. They were in 1992, 97, 98, 2013, and 2015. He had completed some time on ignition interlock after his 2015 conviction. After this tragedy, with the assistance of a lot of folks in research, Zach Meinertz, Ben Johnson, and Senator Ron Latz, I began looking into Minnesota's DWI statutes from a public safety perspective, especially relative to repeat offenders. What I learned was that most people that commit a DWI offense don't commit a second. But if someone commits a second, the likelihood of committing more goes up a lot. From a National Highway Traffic Safety Administration study, 43% of those convicted of DWI in Minnesota were repeat offenders. And in one of the more comprehensive studies around the country on this topic in Maryland several years ago, compared to drivers with no violations, the rate of committing a new violation was 10.6 times greater for drivers with 2 prior convictions and 14.9 times greater for drivers with 3 or more priors. I also learned more about ignition interlock, which is a breathalyzer for your car. According to the CDC, ignition interlocks reduce repeat DWI offenses by about 70% while installed. I also learned that interlock is more effective than license suspension alone, as 50 to 75% of convicted drunk drivers continue to drive on a suspended license. Minnesota's current approach to interlock time requirements for repeat offenders is a linear approach. A second offense gets 1 or 2 years on interlock. A third offense gets 3 years. A fourth offense gets 4 years. But this doesn't match the data for repeat offenders. This proposed legislation ramps the time repeat offenders are required to be on interlock much more aggressively, while also trying to reduce barriers to them getting on it. So in your packet, you have a little description of the bill with a table. It's a rather complex area of law, but basically you can see that we're ramping the interlock requirements from where they were to 2 to 6 to 10 years as offenses go up. We also met with folks from the judicial districts who implement the program, and what we heard was that one of the barriers to the use of interlock was the license reinstatement fee that people have to pay, which is $680. One needs to pay that right now before getting on interlock, and that has created a barrier. So what the legislation also does, and what the amendment that I put on was clarifying, was that we don't want that to be an obstacle. You still must pay it, but not before you get on. You must pay it before you get off. And just as a FYI, there's close to 5,000 cases per year in Minnesota of driving without a license inimical to public safety, and that's folks that already have a DWI and are caught driving. There's also, you'll see, there's a lot of pages because we took the opportunity to reorganize the statute because it was disjointed and had interlock requirements in many different places. So with that, I have a couple of testifiers from the city of St. Louis Park and then also one from Methodist Hospital. I'd like to turn it over to them.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. First, we have Nadia Mohammed, mayor of the city of St. Louis Park.
Thank you. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. As mentioned, my name is Nadia Mohammed, and I serve as the mayor of St. Louis Park, proudly so. The city of St. Louis Park strongly supports HF 2130, the DWI ignition interlock bill. We appreciate the leadership of Representative Kraft and Senator Latz in introducing this bipartisan legislation to reform Minnesota's DWI policies and enhance public safety. And of course, I look forward to supporting this legislation as it moves through the process. This bill is in response, as mentioned before, to the Park Tavern crash that happened in 2024 and the Jebs Olson traffic accident that happened in 2025 as well, which highlighted the current gap in the laws. I will pause a minute and say words that have already been said. We mourn the loss of our community members, and we send our deepest condolences to the families and those impacted in these tragedies. That being said, the HF 2130 will extend ignition interlock requirement to repeat offenders, expand the look-back period from 10 years to 20 years for a second DWI offense, and St. Louis Park Police have already encountered repeat offenders who fall outside the current 10-year look-back period, preventing them from receiving the extended interlock requirements. I know that our police have Chief of Police, I should say, is here to testify more to that detail. I will end it here that the City of St. Louis Park understands the connection between substance abuse issues and impaired driving, which we are also striving or trying to commit, not trying, but we are committed to finding a multi-pronged approach and solutions to the issues at hand. That being said, I urge your support for this bill and appreciate your time today. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have Brian Kroll from the Chief of Police from the City of St. Louis Park. I apologize if I mispronounced it. Go ahead with your testimony.
That's okay. Good afternoon, Committee Chair. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you, Representative Kraft, for your thoughtful and engaged approach on this issue. It's a significant community safety issue. Impaired driving and far too often causes a great deal of harm because of it, including the deaths of innocent bystanders in the motoring and pedestrian public. In just the last few months, as the mayor stated, in St. Louis Park alone, we've experienced two separate impaired driving incidents that have resulted in the deaths of three individuals with significant injuries inflicted upon multiple other victims as well. Impacts felt by countless family members, friends, the broader community, and our first responders who arrive on those scenes, where many of those individuals will not just face the ongoing challenges of physical recovery, but the wellness issues that will linger for some time as well. The opportunity that this bill presents is the potential to stop tragic impaired driving events from happening due to the expanded interlock restrictions that an increase in the look-back period can provide. I can tell you firsthand from being involved in impaired driving arrests as both the arresting officer and as a supervisor that far too many prior DWI convictions do not get accounted for because of the clock stopping at 10 years. This change can make a difference and actually save lives. I also appreciate the thoughtful nature that the mayor touched on, where the bill is considering the financial challenges that are faced by so many who will need to have the interlock devices installed on their vehicles. By helping to reduce some of those barriers associated with the interlock fees, I believe we lessen some of those life's pressures that so many face who may be confronted by addiction and thereby help resolve those underlying issues. St. Louis Park and statewide data show us that impaired driving is still a significant problem plaguing our roads and our communities. This is compounded by the fact of the active use of electronic devices that are going along with this issue as well. Although illegal, we all know that that still takes place today. I believe this bill can make a meaningful difference in addressing the problem, and that is why I'm here before you in support of it. Committee, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chief. And if you could just please state your name for the record as well.
Chief Brian Crowley, St. Louis Park Police.
Thank you very much. And next on the agenda, we have Jen Meister, President of Methodist Hospital. Welcome to the committee. And if you could just state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Chair, Madam Chair, Jennifer Meister, President of Methodist Hospital in St. Louis Park. I am here to support this important legislation in the hopes that others are spared the pain and grief that was caused by the preventable tragedy like we experienced last September and others in St. Louis Park. As you know, as we described, a drunk person drove onto the patio of Park Tavern in St. Louis Park, killing one of our colleagues, Gabe, and a Park Tavern employee, Christina, and causing life-altering injuries to so many others. I think the emotional trauma and the physical trauma cannot be underestimated. I know there's an article in your packet about this tragedy. We understand this legislation will not prevent all tragedies, but it's an important measure for prevention. Thank you, Representative Kraft and Representative Witte, for your leadership on this bill. Thank you to all the co-authors. We ask the committee for your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Meister. And I actually worked my junior year of high school in the food services at Methodist Hospital, and still have a friend who's a nurse there. So thank you very much. Is there any committee discussion? Representative Koznick.
I just had a question to clarify, and we're moving this to judiciary, right?
Correct. Or public safety.
Or public safety. And it can be addressed there more. Representative Kraft, or maybe the police chief, or what is the license revocation matrix look like? If you have a DWI, you lose your license for how long? If you have a DWI in 2 and 5 years or 2 and 10 years, do you have that information, Representative Kraft? Or
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, so license is revoked, and then to get it back, you have to go on interlock. That's your choice. And depending on the amount of what this is doing is saying the time that we're going to require you to be on interlock goes up. Now, if there are some other circumstances, you know, if it's a criminal vehicular homicide or something like that, there may be some, you know, penalty time in there that happens as well before the interlock provisions would kick in.
Representative Koznick.
Yeah, just to wrap it up, I appreciate the bill. I think it's sometimes I get a little cautious if there's a bill in relation to a tragedy. We need to make sure we take time to make sure that the policy we're presenting is solid, not just a reaction. And I'm not suggesting that that's what you're doing here, Representative Kraft, but that's why I asked the question. And I think the interlock does provide a good service to the community. For people that have violated their driving privileges. But I also hope you have a good discussion in public safety and other stops about other deterrents to DWI and driving under the influence.
Representative Olson. Or, I'm sorry, Representative Kraft, did you want to respond to that?
Just briefly. So I appreciate your comment about tragedies, or it shouldn't just be a reaction to that. And it certainly raised the visibility to me. And then as I started looking into it, with the help of Zach Meinertz and actually Ben Johnson, who's here, I really tried to say, where does the data lead me? Where does the data lead this? And the data that I shared seemed to jump out at me that we have a mismatch between what we can do from a public safety perspective to what we're actually doing. But I appreciate the comment. I think you're right.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing this forward. I just kind of wanted to express a little bit of sadness in the fact that we're running super short on time, and I don't think that we're able to give this bill the attention that it truly deserves. I think that this is probably the most overarching bill that we had heard today, and as much as someone might like a road in Crookston, that doesn't apply to the whole state, whereas this one does. And so I'm really kind of disappointed that we didn't have the chance to really hash this out, but at the same time, we definitely don't want to hold it up on its trajectory. So it just, you know, for future planning as we're moving through, I'm definitely going to have more questions on port products and stuff like that we have. So if we take that into account as we move forward, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Kraft, if you would like, Scraba, Representative Scraba.
Thank you. Maybe more of a question or a point than a question, but over all the years I've been involved with as mayor and government watching, it's almost like a rinse and repeat. The person getting the DUI is the same, and it kind of fits a mold. And I'm wondering if we're ever going to get to the root of the problem rather than the symptoms here. It seems to be more of a mental health issue. And how do we solve this? I mean, it just seems like you're punishing, 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 and it doesn't help. We still have DUIs. We still have deaths. We still have everything.
Thank you, Representative Scrub.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think a lot of that has to do with kind of the overall system. And I served for 5 years on the Opioid Epidemic Response Advisory Council. There's lots of needs out there. And, yeah, we absolutely need to be addressing the root cause of these problems. And that's why a lot of these folks that end up in some of these go to treatment courts or get involved in rehab problems or rehab facilities. That's how my brother got into rehab, was getting pulled over 3 times. So, you know, that was kind of a blessing for us. And I have 2 more on the list, Representative Berg, Representative Jones. We're running very short on time, so please make your comments quickly.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Representative Kraft for bringing this and say I take exception to the remarks by Chair Koznick. When you have a tragedy in your community, and you unfortunately find ways to build policy to protect our communities from future tragedies, you take that time to do so. So thank you, Representative Kraft, for doing this for your community and for all of our communities.
Thank you, Representative Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kraft. I just wanted to point out some of the other strategies that we can be looking at in the future, especially when people have a DWI, they still need ways to get around. And so making sure that we have opportunities for transit, for biking, for walking, for you know, ride shares, those types of things, make sure that we can avoid this in the future too.
Thank you. Representative Kraft, closing comments?
Thank you, and I appreciate the comments. I will say, Representative Scraba, I agree, we have to think about root cause stuff, so more investment in mental health. One of the things that the bill does do, in some cases, treatment wasn't required for a multiple offense, and the bill does now require that folks go through treatment. While Interlock, you may kind of be viewed as a punishment, I kind of view it, but I kind of view it more as, you know, how do we make sure the public is safe? And actually, the way Interlock works is you have to blow into it regularly. It can help people on their path to sobriety. Clearly, if someone has a multiple offenses, they probably have an issue. But I really appreciate your comment. You know, thank you all for your comments. I think it's not going to fix things, but the data really led me here. And I also want to thank Representative Witte, who provided really good guidance and help with as I formulated this. So I appreciate everyone's support in sending this on to public safety. And with that, I renew my motion that it be House File 2130 be re-referred to Committee on Public Safety.
Finance and Policy Committee. Wonderful. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. With that, our meeting is adjourned.